I'm Erica Heilman, and this is Rumble Strip, good conversation that takes its time. Today's show is an extended version of a story that is going to play this week during Morning Edition and All Things Considered. It's part of a periodic series called What Class Are You? About class and cultural divides in Vermont. Dan Seiden grew up in Barnegat, New Jersey, in a house with a lot of books and not a lot of money. As a little kid, he and his friends hustled up jobs around the neighborhood, mowing lawns, washing cars, selling clams down on the commercial dock. Eventually, Dan got a full scholarship to college, then he put himself through law school. And since 1993, Dan Seiden has been working as a criminal defense attorney in Vermont, where he works with poor people and rich people and all the people in between. In this segment, Dan talks about what this line of work has taught him about the American class system. Welcome.
Class, it's a psychological state, and it's a psychological state that's formed in your childhood. You are the class that you grew up in. I've known working class folks who really made it with big plumbing and electrical contractors, and they owned airplanes and camps and had tons of cash. You know, but they were working class through and through. Like, they were never not going to be. The flip side of that is I've had encounters with people professionally as a lawyer who had grown up in very privileged circumstances. Wealth and security and power and access and education and people to guide them. And yet, you know, a series of unfortunate events had landed them talking to me about some misfortune. And they could be penniless and often were at this point. And yet they had a bearing, right? They just had a confidence that endured from that privilege. Like anyone who's been to graduated from Ivy League college, they could be living under a bridge, and you know it the minute you meet them, because you know they just carry that with them. You know, that's class. That's class in America. And I don't find these categories limiting, by the way. So to say someone's a plumber and they're working class is like limiting and defining the way that we do. What it means is that the means of their sustenance is the work of their hands. And I grew up with the working class kids. And the thing about the working class kids is that they distinguish themselves as kids, as teenagers, as 12, 13, 14-year-olds, because we knew how to make money. We knew how to hustle up money. Like, we would literally knock on doors. We'd be like, you need anything done? You need wood split or something mowed or painted or something? Give us money. But those kids distinguish themselves from the dirtbag class, from the layabouts, the people who don't do anything. And literally, those working class kids, when they run into each other, and they haven't seen each other for a while, at least where I grew up, southern New Jersey, the first thing they'd say to each other is, you working? You working? Oh, you're on it. Where's the job? You know? And similarly, hey, I need a job. You know, you working? Can you get me a job? Can you get me on that site? Can you introduce me to your supervisor? Like, literally, it was a culture of work.
Okay, so you talk about all these gradations of class.
Right.
Who are the dirtbags, as you say?
As soon as you define something, you both limit it and you shrink it. So it's terrible to talk about, like, dirtbag class. I mean, but that's the terms that people use. That's the kids I grew up with.
And who were they?
They were, like, the terminally poor. They were the people in the absolutely fallen down houses or, like, you know, just, like, not a working automobile in the family. But, you know, you look back on it, who were they really? They were judged. They only worked intermittently or not at all, or got by on scams or some crime, you know, and whatever. They were much closer to that edge that working class kids avoided, because it's too easy to go over that edge if you're in the working class. But yeah, the really poor people were the mentally ill, generational trauma, you know, victims of one kind or another, partially physically disabled parents. And then, you know, all those judgments rain down on you and access dries up. And you know what I mean? Like, even opportunities to lift yourself up dry up once you're confined to that. And For a long time, I struggled, and I would be, like, people would ask me how I grew up, and for a long time, I would just say poor, until I came to realize that that was dishonest, because if I'm going to say I was poor, then someone's going to say, oh, you were poor like, say, a non-white kid under, you know, equal income circumstances, equal demographics, single mother. And I came to realize, no, that's intensely dishonest, because all I needed was a haircut and a button-down shirt, and I slipped right in. It's a hard ceiling. But my upbringing and my life were the perfect preparation for what I ended up doing with my life, which is representing people from every variety of life, anyone. I also came to understand the impermeability of class to some extent later in life, because the real bastions of privilege in America are not about achievement. They're about power and status. In other words, they don't care how far you've traveled. They don't care if you're a harder worker. In fact, they'll admit you're a harder worker than I am, but it's about pedigree, and it's about papers, and it's about institutions. And that's it. And that's it.
What do you learn about class as a lawyer? Or what did you learn about class through the years?
My whole journey through this world has always been as a little person, not connected to money or power or anyone privileged. If I wanted to be a lawyer, I had to figure that out. And, you know, for my family, the achievement was very significant. They were all very happy with it. Like, wow, he did something. We had no freaking idea how to tell him how to do that. Like, there was no one in the family. There was no uncle. There was no one, no trusted advisor. There was no one. Took me under their wing and was like, here's what you do. And so it was eye-opening after all that to encounter people who were like, oh, you went to a state university. That's unfortunate. And once I was licensed and actually practicing, I made a lot of money pretty early on in cases against lawyers who had graduated from Harvard. Like, I came to realize, oh, you, that's great. I'm really glad for you. Can you know someone's been to Harvard? Because they'll tell you within the first 5 minutes you meet them that they've been to Harvard. That's the joke and the rule, and it's true. But none of that matters when the rubber meets the road. Now it's just me and you in here, and that's it. I'm just going to win this. You're not going to outwork me on this. And I don't think you're actually smarter. And I bring special skills that you'll never have. So,
like,
well, I could knock you out. I just keep that in my back pocket. Like, ultimately, the foundation of my confidence is, I've heard a lot of working class kids say this, but you go into a room to do something for a first time, like public speaking or something. I've heard, like, working class kids, like, bucking themselves up. And it's like, it's not like they're going to beat your ass. It's like, what's the worst thing you get laughed at? They ain't going to beat your ass, right?
But in your estimation of having earned success, did it take longer in your estimation because of where you came from?
It sometimes takes longer to get that confidence. So much of class in America is confidence, you know? Confident just like at a certain ease in the world, just at a level of ease in the world. And
so you had to earn that confidence and ease. That is an overcoming of a class divide.
Yeah, that's it. And I think that, like, there's people that wake up with economic anxiety and go to bed with economic anxiety, and it's so destructive. It's so limiting. When you're worried about money all the time, you know what you can't do? You can't think about bigger things, higher goals. Like, survival becomes its own trap. And so many people are in it. It's so much harder. I won't say they can't do it, because people do it. But it's so much harder when you're constantly worried about survival, about, like, next month's rent and if the car breaks down. And everything's so tenuous.
And that, you still feel the vestiges of that anxiety.
You always feel the vestiges of that. And that's what I'm saying. I know really wealthy people who grew up very modest circumstances, they still feel the vestiges of it. They still, like, save things. And, you know, you'll find the evidence of it. You know, there are 10,000 yogurt containers in their closet. Like, what's that? You know, garage is full. You know, like, they're just old 2x4s they save, or, you know, just...
Guilty of all.
Right. So, you know, that to some extent is a holdover. And it doesn't mean you don't have anything money can buy. But it's the psychological imprint from where you were as a child.
Your job is to represent people who have been accused of crimes.
Or in various circumstances presented with some difficulty.
Problems.
Some problems. Some legal.
People have problems.
Legal
they come
issues.
To you.
Yeah.
So what do you know about class because of the billions of cases you've done?
Some things transcend class. For instance, if a person's child is in peril, or there's a problem involving their child, a poor person has exactly the same emotional response to that as an extraordinarily powerful and politically connected and rich, wealthy person. A lot of things are primal fear. When people are in trouble and at risk of being incarcerated, losing their freedom, and all the terrors that come with that, people react pretty much the same to that too. It's just people's personal individual response to a crisis is frequently the same, but their capability and what they bring to it to respond to it is vastly different. So someone from, you know, the margins of society might find me because they're like, hey, you helped my neighbor and he said to call you. And then someone who's really connected might be, I spoke to the family lawyer who called his friend from law school, who spoke to his partner, and he said, you're the man to see with this problem. But that's it. But ultimately it's the same, but it's just how they come to find you. And then they're like, it was harder because you don't have a website. And I was like, yes, it was harder. But here we are. So.
You know, the captain of industry who comes to you because his son is in trouble, and then the single mother who comes because her son is in trouble, they are the same, ultimately. At that level. How are they profoundly different?
A poor person is not at all confident as to what's going to happen tomorrow at all, or that they're going to survive this crisis. But privileged people, when there's a problem, they're going to solve that freaking problem. They're going to lay down a pile of money. They're going to hire whoever they have to hire and do whatever they have to do. They'll move mountains. They're going to solve this problem, right? If you can't do it, I'll fire you and I'll hire someone else. It's not personal, but I'm going to get this problem solved. That's confidence. That's class.
You get what you pay for.
Yes. And in America, there is not one justice system. There's the same rules, technically, but boy, your ability to access that system and make it work for you and achieve outcomes is vastly different with wealth and status and prestige and class and privilege. Not in every case. I mean, Harvey Weinstein sits in jail today, but on the average, we all know that the better off you are, the better off you are.
What is it that you've needed? You care a lot about issues of class for personal reasons. What are you trying to get free of?
Yeah, no, it's accretive for me. You know, I don't leave anything behind. I mean, this isn't F. Scott Fitzgerald. I want all the money. I want to jump right to the top. I didn't even want that. I wanted to be everything I had ever been, you know, and become a free person in society. Right? Free and independent and confident and the American dream, like my own man. And so that required pulling everything along with me, but reconciling some of these things and not carrying resentment and not carrying like that as baggage, but carrying it as like strength. In other words, becoming bigger. Everything you've ever done and everything you've ever learned and everything you've ever been or experienced, you know, builds you versus like, you're some imposter trying to escape that and leave that behind. Although I wouldn't want to be poor again. I mean, who would?
That was Vermont attorney Dan Seaton. You've been listening to Rumble Strip, distributed on the radio by Vermont Public. Tune in this week for the whole What Class Are You series. It'll air right here on Morning Edition and All Things Considered. This is Rumblestrip. I'm Erica Heilman. Thanks a lot for listening.